families exist due to men being uncomfortable in addressing their health due to such variables as being labeled weak, or they simply are simply fearful to speak about personal issues. But it can also be associated with the many symptoms of depression that either go unnoticed or passed off as something else. In either case, both require additional public awareness to prompt men into being more active in recognizing and acting upon these issues. Men can, and more often do, experience depression differently from women. While women are likely to have more obvious symptoms, such as sadness, guilt, or feelings of hopelessness, men tend to have more of the less obvious symptoms, such as fatigue, restlessness, lack of drive, less energy, and/or altered sleeping patterns. Considering the combination of social stigmas and less obvious signs of depression, it certainly gives credence as to why depression in men goes largely unnoticed and under-addressed. Signs and symptoms of depression range from vague to obvious, which, although some can be more prevalent in one gender versus the other, can be experienced by both men and women. These include, but are not limited to, the following: persistent sad, anxious, or empty feelings; anger that seems to come out of nowhere; pessimism or hopelessness; feelings of guilt or remorse; irritability, restlessness, fatigue and or decreased energy; lack of drive; lack of interest in sex or romantic activities with your partner; insomnia or excessive sleeping; overeating or loss of appetite; aches, pains, headaches, abdominal cramping and or stomach issues that are unresolved with treatment; thoughts of harming yourself and or committing suicide. The other component of depression is that it isn't a universal diagnosis and therefore doesn't have a universal treatment. It comes in various forms, requiring specific care to target the underlying cause to treat depression effectively. Additionally, underlying conditions also play a significant role in identifying depression and managing the disease. Things such as post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, anxiety, chronic illnesses, and even certain types of medication, both prescription and illicit drugs, can increase the likelihood of men having depression within their lifetime. Therefore, breaking down any barriers they may have to openly communicate with their health care providers is essential to reach a possible diagnosis and begin treatment sooner. Early recognition and treatment is key. A failure to do this will escalate the severity of existing health problems and can even result in new ones, some of which can carry grave consequences. The danger undiagnosed and untreated depression has, specific to men, is too many of these cases end up in physical harm and even death. Destructive behaviors, often starting with alcohol and drug abuse, can lead to a further spiral of self-harm up to the point of committing suicide. This is where the disparities on depression statistics continue to widen and emphasize the point of being more aggressive in tackling this issue from a male's perspective. While more women attempt suicide, more men will die by suicide in the United States. It all boils down to women are more likely to seek help, while men will not. It may be men are afraid to speak up, assume symptoms are something else, and don't wait to get evaluated or treated. Regardless, we have to start taking this issue more seriously in men and change the current course in which it's heading. Levi Stone, RNMSN. Something for Everyone. Photos by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Cosplayers walked through the aisles of the Permian Basin Comic Con Saturday morning at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. Permian Basin Comic Con X runs through today, with doors opening at 10 a.m. and closing at 8 p.m. Tickets range from day passes for children costing $10 and adult day passes costing $20. To ensure the safety of guests, Permian Basin Comic Con X is requiring all guests to wear a mask to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. A photo is of crowds of people, some in costume, others standing around looking at displays. Randy Reyes flips through comic boxes looking for issues of The Amazing Spider-Man at the Permian Basin Comic Con Saturday morning at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. Kathy Rauda sent her right, and her children, Alexandra, 13, left, and Muncie, 11, right, take a photo with Walter Emmanuel Jones, center left, who played the original Black Ranger for the show Mighty Morphin Power Rangers at the Permian Basin Comic Con Saturday morning at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. Master Gardeners, hearty Sonoran native, full of history, by Debbie Rowland and Emmy Elmschneider, Master Gardeners. Copper Canyon Daisy, Tagetes limoni, is a tough plant that grows well in West Texas. It is native to the Sonoran Desert in Arizona and northern Mexico and has quite a history. If you look at the species name, limoni, the double I means that the plant was named for a person whose last name was Lemon. Sarah Plummer Lemon started a library and helped to form the Santa Barbara Natural History Society. She married John Lemon in 1880, sold her library, and traveled to Arizona for their honeymoon, where they collected plants. On this trip, they discovered a new species of Tagetes, which is named for them. They introduced Tagetes limoni to the California plant trade, and the rest is history. Both survived the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 and were eventually reunited under a gravestone inscribed Partners in Botany. This shrub is drought tolerant, requiring little water once established and no fertilizer. Plant in full sun or part shade. Deer do not like it, probably due to the smell. I first encountered this perennial plant at a Master Gardener plant sale. There were a few plants left when the sale was over, and I bought all four. That was 6 years ago, and they are thriving in my backyard. They have grown into gorgeous 3-foot by 3-foot shrubs that have long, thin leaves. They bloom twice a year, in the spring and again in the fall. I find that mine blooms prolifically in October, just like clockwork. The yellow flowers are so dense that you can no longer see the leaves. A great plant for our area and a love story. This plant is usually available in local nurseries. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Gardening, Texas Master Gardeners. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. This is the way. Photo by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Jay King, right, takes a photo of his daughter Arwen standing next to cosplayer Nathaniel Lustenau, who is dressed as the character The Mandalorian from the hit Disney series of the same name, at the Permian Basin Comic Con Saturday morning at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. Pets of the Week. Top photos courtesy of Odessa Humane Society. Buffy, a 4-year-old female bulldog mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. Kiwi, a 4-month-old female kitten, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Buffy or Kiwi or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane. Call 381-5503, visit www.odessahumane.org. odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Bottom photos by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Tiger, an adult male black and gray tabby, needs to be adopted into a good home. Shelly, a 1 to 2 year old female brown shepherd mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. Shelly is carrying something that she's fetching to somebody, and she's in the middle of the run. She's very active, looks very active. To adopt Tiger or Shelly or any of the other pets at the Odessa Animal Control, stop by 910 West 42nd Street or call 368-3526. If Shelly or Tiger has been adopted, there are many other pets that need good homes.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for the weekend edition, Saturday, March 13th, 2021.
Bouncing Bet is a sweetly scented flower. Bouncing Bet, Saponaria officinalis, also known as soapwort and wild sweet William, is well adapted to Texas. It is tough, will tolerate a variety of growing conditions, is drought tolerant, and makes a dense ground cover. Also, the flowers are showy. Deer will not eat it. The name originated in England, where barmaids, who were sometimes referred to as bets, cleaned bottles by putting a sprig of this plant and filling them with water. They then shook them to get them clean, thus the term bouncing bets. Bouncing bet contains saponin. Bouncing bet contains saponin in the leaves and the roots. Saponin can be poisonous in large quantities when ingested, causing vomiting and diarrhea. Adding water to saponin creates a lather. The early settlers boiled the roots and leaves, producing a soap. It grows to a height of 28 inches and has pink, sometimes white, sweetly scented flowers. The 5 petals form a 1-inch flower, which are arranged in dense clusters. The fragrant smell attracts moths, butterflies, and birds. The smell is said to resemble the scent of clover and bouquets. This perennial can be direct sown on the surface in fall or spring. Spacing of seeds depends on the variety and the mature height of the plant. Check your seed packet for directions on that. The plants can be thinned as soon as the first true leaves appear. Removing spent blooms stimulates reblooming, keeps the plant from getting leggy, and makes for a more compact, pretty plant. The plant can be mowed to the ground in the fall. Bouncing Bet is resistant to insects and diseases and will grow in either wet or dry conditions. If you have questions, please call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700 for more gardening information. Additional information is available at aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu and westtexasgardening.org. Debbie Rowland and Emmy Ohmschneider, Master Gardeners. Follow this post-freeze care guide. Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Specialist Greg Grant provides more tips following the historic February freeze. Palm trees and sago palms, many will be damaged or dead, but do nothing but cut off the dead fronds for now. It will take months to see if they resprout. Historically, the only palms reliably cold hardy here in Northeast Texas, and the only ones to survive 0 degrees in the 1980s, were Mexican Texas Sabal palms, brazoria palms, dwarf palmettos, and a number of windmill palms. All others froze and died. Sagos aren't true palms, are less cold hardy, and back then were only cold hardy from Interstate 10 South. St. Augustine and Centipede lawns. There will possibly be dead areas and freeze damage. Mow as normal, but avoid pre-emergent herbicides, which can damage injured grass. Do not fertilize until nights are warmer in mid-April, and do not water until June, July, and August, once per week, 1 inch per application. Watering in the spring contributes to gray leaf spot and brown patch. Most folks water too often and cause their own problems. Crepe myrtles. There will be different amounts of damage on different cultivars in different microclimates. Don't do anything until they start to sprout. Then cut back to where new growth is occurring, even if it's at the ground. They will grow back vigorously. In the 1980s, Lagerstroemia pharaoh froze and died. Natchez and many hybrids froze to the ground, and there were varying degrees of damage to most older indica cultivars. Fruit trees. Most are cold hardy, except citrus, pomegranates, olives, and figs. Those will have varying degrees of damage and death. Once again, do nothing for now and prune back to live growth when they sprout. Open flowers and fat buds on blueberries, peaches, and pears froze, but the trees should be alive and sprout as normal. Unfortunately, fruit production will be limited. I think blackberries will be fine. If plants are green and not withered, they are most likely fine. It all has to do with their evolutionary and geographical genetics as to whether they can survive 0 degrees. But just because they are brown doesn't mean they are dead. It's possible that the stems or roots may still be alive. Give them time. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa, or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. You can email Jeanette at jeanette.castagnon@ag.tamu.edu with questions. Jeanette Castagnon, Texas A&M AgriLife. Great love story behind the Copper Canyon Daisy. Copper Canyon Daisy, Tagetes lemoni, is a tough plant that grows well in West Texas. It is native to the Sonoran Desert in Arizona and northern Mexico, and has quite a history. If you look at the species name, lemoni, the double I means that the plant was named for a person whose last name was Lemon. Sarah Plummer Lemon started a library and helped to form the Santa Barbara Natural History Society. She married John Lemon in 1880, sold her library, and traveled to Arizona for their honeymoon, where they collected plants. On this trip, they discovered a new species of Tagetes that is named for them. They introduced Tagetes lemoni to the California plant trade, and the rest is history. Both survived the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 and were eventually reunited under a gravestone inscribed, "Partners in Botany." This shrub is drought-tolerant, requiring little water once established and no fertilizer. Plant in full sun or part shade. Deer do not like it, probably due to the smell. I first encountered this perennial plant at a Master Gardener plant sale. There were a few plants left when the sale was over, and I bought all four. That was 6 years ago, and they are thriving in my backyard. They have grown into gorgeous 3-foot by 3-foot shrubs that have long, thin leaves. They bloom twice a year, in the spring and again in the fall. I find that mine blooms prolifically in October, just like clockwork. The yellow flowers are so dense that you can no longer see the leaves. It is a great plant for our area and a love story. This plant is usually available in local nurseries. If you have questions, please call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700 for more gardening information. Additional information is available at aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu and westtexasgardening.org. Debbie Rowland and Emmy Olmschneider, Master Gardeners.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 27, 2021. March 2nd isn't just another day. Tumbleweed Smith, columnist. There's not much hoopla, no organized statewide celebration, but March 2nd, 1836, is an important day in the history of Texas. That's the day Texas became a republic and declared its independence from Mexico. It was a long time coming. In 1820, Moses Austin asked the Spanish government in Mexico for permission to settle in Texas. He was granted land, but Austin died soon thereafter, and his son, Stephen F. Austin, took over the project. In 1821, Mexico declared its independence from Spain, and Austin negotiated a contract with the new Mexican government to allow him to bring 300 families to the undeveloped area. Others joined in the settlement, and soon the Mexican settlers were in the minority. Mexico was not pleased with the situation and passed laws to restrict the flow of immigrants to the new land. In 1833, Austin went to Mexico seeking statehood for Texas within Mexico, but was sent to prison. He was released in 1835, the year Mexican dictator Santa Anna demanded that citizens of Gonzales return a cannon that had been used to defend against Indian attack. When Mexican troops were sent to retrieve the cannon, Gonzales residents fired it at them while yelling, "Come and take it!" That became known as the First Battle of the Texas Revolution. Texas formed an army under Sam Houston and established a provisional government. A convention of Texans met at Washington on the Brazos with the purpose of drafting a constitution and declaring independence from Mexico. In December of 1835, the Texas Army drove Mexican troops out of San Antonio. In January of 1836, Santa Anna's army began its assault on the Alamo. The delegates in Washington on the Brazos voted in the Declaration of Independence on March 2nd during the siege on the Alamo. The Alamo battle was fierce. Santa Anna attacked with more than 3,000 soldiers. The Texans were sorely outnumbered with less than 200 troops. For 12 days, the former mission was bombarded by cannon and rifle fire. Colonel William Travis smuggled out a message to Texans that read, "I shall never surrender or retreat. Victory or death." The Mexicans claimed victory over the Alamo defenders on March 6, 1836. 6 weeks later, General Sam Houston's army surprised Santa Anna's troops at San Jacinto with shouts of, "Remember the Alamo!" The Texans defeated the Mexican troops and captured Santa Anna. The Mexican dictator withdrew his troops south of the Rio Grande and recognized Texas as a republic. For nearly 10 years, Texas existed as a separate country with Houston as its first president. In 1845, Texas joined the Union as the 28th state.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, March 17, 2021. An Asian spin on a St. Patty's Day tradition by Brenda Garcia, MSRD, United Supermarkets Lifestyle Desk. If you are getting in the spirit for St. Patty's Day and want the food you serve to match your party theme, add these corned beef and cabbage egg rolls to your menu. Or maybe you are just looking for something to make for dinner tonight. Corned beef and cabbage spring rolls use purple cabbage, onion, caraway seeds, corned beef, Swiss cheese, and egg roll wrappers. Purple cabbage, also known as red cabbage, is a member of the Brassica family of vegetables. It is a cruciferous vegetable that is very low in calories and high in water content. The high water content allows you to consume a large portion for few calories. It is rich in vitamin C and vitamin K. Purple cabbage also contains fiber, which helps to produce a feeling of satiety and fullness. Purple cabbage is especially high in anthocyanins, which is an antioxidant that works to support your immune system and has cancer-preventing properties. The corned beef and cabbage egg rolls put a twist on traditional Irish cuisine and are diet-friendly for guests watching their figure. The recipe calls for a relatively small portion of lean corned beef, considering you are making 10 spring rolls. Using reduced fat Swiss cheese is a great way to keep the fat and sodium down, and they are baked, not fried, lowering the fat content of traditional spring rolls. These egg rolls are a must for upcoming St. Patty's Day celebrations. If you really want to stay more traditional and go with green cabbage, you can easily make that substitution. Green cabbage still has some great nutritional value and is easy to find both in the whole head or pre-shredded. When shopping for cabbage, look for a head with leaves packed tightly together. You can store cabbage in your refrigerator for up to 2 weeks. If you use the pre-shredded version, just look for the use-by date. One more tip. Those egg roll wrappers can be a little sneaky to find in the store. At United and Market Street, you can find them in the produce section, usually near the vegan cheeses. Hope you enjoy and find lots of luck with this recipe. Corned beef and cabbage egg rolls. Ingredients: 10 egg roll wrappers, 1 pound shredded purple cabbage, 1 medium onion, finely minced, 1 teaspoon caraway seed, optional, 1 tablespoon olive oil, 1/2 pound thinly sliced corned beef julienne, 1/2 teaspoon ground black pepper, 4 ounces shredded Swiss cheese chilled, Thousand Island dressing. Instructions: saute the onion and cabbage in olive oil over medium heat until cooked and most liquid has evaporated. Remove from heat, stir in pepper, caraway seeds, onion, and cheese. Mix thoroughly, set aside. Add 6 slices of corned beef and then cabbage from the left to right side of the egg roll wrapper. You may have to adjust amounts, less or more, depending on the size of the wrapper or desired fullness. Fold left and right sides of wrapper over edges of filling. Roll wrapper from bottom. Repeat with remaining egg roll wrappers. Heat the oven to 375 degrees. Bake egg rolls for about 20 minutes or until golden brown. Serve hot with a side of Thousand Island dressing.
Thank you for joining us for this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Far West